government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this May the 18th on the West Coast, now May the 19th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Well, I had a kind of interesting evening. I got to sit in on a city council meeting. And there was a point where I actually was afforded the opportunity to get up and address the council because they were in the midst preparing for a third reading on a street improvement project that's been in the works for several years. What's most interesting, and I'll spare all the gory details. What's really interesting, and I mentioned this on a past show last week, that that this council has determined that they're going to fix one street. But keep in mind, the whole city needs work on the streets, but they're going to fix one street. They're going to make it completely new. They're going to redo the sewers, the culverts, as they like to call it, the drainage, in other words. And then they're going full tilt, like a high-end limousine, they're going to put in sidewalks. Now, very few people use this street other than businesses that roll up and down, such as Federal Express and UPS and the usual garbage trucks and that. And I suppose out of everyone that lives anywhere near this particular street that's being repaired, targeted to be repaired, the residents themselves probably use it the least amount. And yet they're going to be assessed amounts between $18,000 and $20,000 each. Of course, the city's going to pay the balance, which really means the taxpayers. The councilmen like to say, oh, the city's going to pay for this. The city's paying for this. No, it's the people. Well, I got up and I addressed a couple of issues. The recent hijacking of the city's website by a so-called administrator who was operating under verbal agreement with the administration, and he hijacked the website, and this became an issue. This is actually a criminal issue because there is certainly enough evidence to show that this individual stole the site and defrauded the city out of thousands of dollars. One of the councilmen decided that it was more important to just sweep this under the rug. Let's let this go. Let's move on. Let's take care of new business. Well, as recently as last week, all of a sudden, because of the outrage over the assessments that no one knew they were going to get until this thing sort of panned itself out according to the secret plan, one of the councilmen said, well, if you think this project is just going to fall by the wayside after all the money we spent. Well, now we've got two contradictory statements by the same council person about sweep the website theft issue and all the money that was paid out, thousands of dollars, under the rug. Let's forget about it. Turn a new page. And yet when it comes to putting this street in and assessing 30 homeowners amounts between $18,000 and $20,000 to pay for this work, plus the rest of the city is paying for it. Let's not kid ourselves. This money comes out of thin air, but they assign the debt to us. This is the point I'm making here. So to make a long story short, I got up and I pointed out these two issues, and I asked the councilmen and the administration if they could explain to me what the gold fringe was on the American and the state flags. And would you believe no one in the place could do that? No one could do that. Now, I should be fair to the mayor, because our mayor knew, but was just biting her upper lip, we'll say. And allowing the procedure to pan out, as it were. Now, what does this have to do with tonight's show? Well, it's amazing because here I addressed a group of city council people and administration, people who are making laws affecting everyone's life, affecting their budgets, affecting their family life, their health, their happiness, their possible prosperity, and they had no clue as to the reality of the situation they're in. And tonight's guest is going to tell us about what he does. We had him on last week. If you listened to last Monday's show, you know very well who's on tonight. We're going to talk about a prerogative that's available to us, a right that's available to us through the Constitution and actually legislation. The loopholes are in there for the people, but we are also going to pay attention to how a lot of information is reaching us that has nothing to do with creating the laws. It's just the typical spin. We're going to get into that with tonight's guest. We welcome him back to Evident Footprints. He is the national spokesperson for American Grand Jury, and he's gradually becoming one of my favorite journalists, Mr. Sam Sewell. Sam, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here, but I thought there for a minute that you were going to tie your introduction and introduce me as saying our guest tonight also has no clue. You know.
No, I sincerely doubt that, to tell you the truth.
All right. Well, look, boy, do I have a bunch of things I want to talk about tonight.
I'm sure you do.
As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure I've got more than an hour's worth. But let's do a bit of an update on the grand jury issue before I launch into what I think is the main theme of what I want to talk about tonight.
Okay.
I can't remember if the Texas grand jury had come back when we talked last week, but the Texas grand jury met and issued an indictment against Mr. Obama. That would be there are several now. Mm-hmm. If you go to americagrandjury.org, on the home page, you have to scroll down a little bit because there's been a couple of articles added, but you'll see the full list of the grand juries that have met and what level of organization they are in and whether or not they have yet issued an indictment. Probably more important than what's been accomplished so far is what I know is on tap. There are, and I mean this now, we have close to, well, look, I'm guessing because I don't have the real figure, but we have about 500 grand jurors lined up. It takes 25 people to adequately populate a single grand jury. So we are going to be able to continue to pump out these indictments. Not only that, we're going to start specializing. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the indictments have been general, fraud, and treason. I'm personally working on a project to indict Mr. Obama and all of the Democratic leaders in my county. And what they will be indicted on is election fraud for Mr. Obama, allowing his name to be placed on the ballot when he knew he was not eligible to be on the ballot. And the Democratic leadership in our county will be named as co-conspirators in that indictment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have over 3,000 counties in this country, and we only need one judge to order a trial. Now, how likely is it that if we keep pumping out these grand jury indictments, both the generalized grand jury indictments and the specialized ones for individual counties for election fraud, how long do you think we're going to have to do that before we find a prosecutor and a judge that also agree with 58% of the American people that we have a right to see this guy's records. And it's not just, the birth certificate. As you know, the birth certificate might actually be a red herring issue. It has to do with his college records because he may indeed have been registered as a foreign student and received aid to foreign students while he was at Columbia and Harvard and Occidental College. He has never released his medical records. Only president in history that has not released his medical records. As well as we want to know what his passport records are because we want to know. He talks about him being an international traveler. As a matter of fact, instead of calling himself a citizen of the United States, he actually, with his own words, called himself a citizen of the world. And we have a right to be able to see his passport records. And then there's also the Immigration and Naturalization Service records that need to be revealed because there's some concern. I want to be careful how I say this because, Don, I know that you do careful research. Mm-hmm. And besides, you know how if you get into research, the real reason, I shouldn't speak for you. The real reason I'm so careful is because I don't want to look like an idiot. And there's people out there, looking at everything you do and going through it with a fine-tooth comb. And that's the reason before I publish anything, mm-hmm. I make sure that there isn't some really stupid mistake in there.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be careful about how I say this. We do not have enough evidence to say that Mr. Obama was a citizen of Indonesia and that his religion was Muslim. Now, let me tell you why we don't have enough evidence. The only evidence we have is the school record for the school that he attended when he lived in Indonesia. That school record was probably filled out either by his mother or his father. And parents can put anything they want to on a school record. In other words, that isn't official enough to say that he was actually an Indonesian citizen. But if he traveled on an Indonesian passport at any time, the only way he could have traveled on an Indonesian passport is if he was an Indonesian citizen.
That's correct.
What that means, of course, is we need to know how he got back into the country. Is he now a naturalized citizen, having once been a citizen of Indonesia? So that even though, and I realize that I haven't even mentioned the other thing, that he's also a citizen of Great Britain and a citizen of Kenya. As a matter of fact, there's more evidence that he's a citizen of Great Britain and a citizen of Kenya and a citizen of Indonesia, then there is evidence that he's a citizen of the United States.
Well, I haven't seen a lick of evidence on the United States, to tell you the truth.
No, there isn't any.
Yeah.
There just flat out isn't any. And the document that would prove that, he's been spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to keep lawyers from ordering that document. So, let me give you an example of what I mean by that issue. So he blocked, I shouldn't say he blocked the birth certificate. The birth certificate is blocked by law. What he would have to do is order the release of the birth certificate. And he hasn't done that. So what some people did was, his mother's dead. Dead people don't have a right of confidentiality. So what they did was went to all of the hospitals in Hawaii and found out that Stanley Ann Dunham, or Stanley Ann Obama, had never been a patient in that hospital and had never given birth to a baby in any of the hospitals in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is negative evidence, if you know what I mean, and it isn't conclusive because maybe it was a home birth. Now, I know that that's unlikely, but you know how it is with research. You can't leave one of those unlikely stones unturned and still say that you have it nailed down. But what I'm trying to say is the only evidence at all that he was actually born in the United States is the comments made by his sister, who, is younger than him. So there's no way she could have known. What she's reporting is that the family rumor was that he was born in a hospital in Hawaii, And when someone said, well, we checked the hospital records and it said he wasn't born there, then she said, oh, well, then it must have been the other hospital. So the only evidence we have that he was born in Hawaii, oh, I know, there's all kinds of people that say, why, his birth certificate is published on the web, and you can go look at it anytime, and, of course, they'll give you a link that takes you to that certification of live birth. It doesn't prove a thing. Even if it wasn't forged, all it proves is it's self-evident. He's actually born. Yep, he's here. That's all it proves.
Well, yeah, based on the alterations, though, the whole document is void, as if I'm to take, or if we are to take the instructions seriously.
That's correct. There's no way that constitutes evidence. And even if it hadn't been altered, let's just assume for a minute that it was legitimate. I don't know if you ever saw the thing I posted, because I got a big kick out of this. It occurred to me, you know what? There should be a receipt for $12 for that document.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody said, well, no, a forged document, oh, don't be silly. Here's the receipt for $12 from the Hawaii Department of Public Health. What I'm saying is they were creative enough to forge the document, but neglected to forge the receipt that they'd actually paid for the document.
Sure.
Now, it would have had to have been paid by check or by credit card or by money order. All of
and
those
would,
things.
There would be a ledger also in the office at the health department or the Bureau of Vital Statistics, Secretary of State's office, somewhere where they actually fulfilled that order, right?
Right. So, okay, why don't we just say, okay, all right. Okay, look, I'm being nitpicky. So there is some question about it. Okay, that's fine. If you know what would satisfy me, just give me the receipt that you actually ordered it, okay? And we'll forget about that part of
mm-hmm.
it. Because it doesn't really prove anything anyway.
Yeah.
All it really says is, yeah, he's been born. Well, we knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Sam, if I can interrupt just for a second to make a point. We're expected to accept what's written in an autobiography or in a biography or in news reports or quotes from so-called family members. Now, what really strikes my mind, and if you read any of my work, there's a point where I address the so-called grandmother, one of several grandmothers that he had. This is what's absurd about the story. Kezia is her name, and she's living sort of like in self-imposed exile in London. And she's interviewed by Mail Online, and she's describing the learning of Stanley Ann Dunham coming down with breast cancer. Now, we have an anomaly here that's not been explained, other than by me so far, and that's that Stanley Ann died of ovarian cancer, according to Barack.
Yes.
But Kezia, the grandmother, says that she had a great friendship with her, and they communicated and visited together many times. I'm not buying that, other than she visited when she was bringing them money to keep this story going, is how I see it, that the Ford Foundation was actually paying her to go around and bribe everybody that was going to hold up this story eventually when it came under the type of scrutiny it's under. Now, if I can briefly say, she makes the claim, even though Barack says the first time he went to Kenya was after his so-called stepbrother David Obama died. Okay, he didn't get to meet him, he said. But Kezia says Barack was first there in 1985. And then that debunks that lie, if that's true. But then later she says she witnessed, and this is after Jerome Corsi, and I'm trying to think of the other investigator, went to Kenya and interviewed the family through a pastor. It was an American pastor that actually interviewed her and recorded this interview, and they had an interpreter. And
yeah, I actually have that. I have that affidavit on my website.
Okay. So the gist of what I'm going to say there is that she says that she witnessed the birth of Barack in the hospital there in 1961. Now, She's just said the first time Barack went there was 1985, debunking what he says in his autobiography, 1987, and says she witnessed the birth. So the first time he was in Kenya then, if this story is true, is 1961. How can she be off 24 years? How can a person be off that far? You see, these people aren't telling the truth. This is just one fiction on top of the other. That's the point I'm trying to make here for the listening audience, is that we're told these lies, and we don't really pay attention to the fact that, wait a minute, this person said this before. How come this has changed? All these facts are different. They're representing the same information in a different format, in a different mode, and we're just supposed to forget everything else that was said. What is that called?
Yeah, there's so many lies that, can you imagine trying to pick out an individual snowflake in a blizzard? And that's one of the reasons this is so hard to pin down, is there are so many lies and so many stories that it's almost impossible to sort it out. I think I used the example, I was on your program last week, this guy named Don Brown, who wrote the Da Vinci Code.
Yes.
An incredibly intricate plots that twisted here and there and everywhere. When they finally, you know, write a historical novel about the life of Barack Obama, it's going to be more complicated than one of Don Brown's mystery novels. It's going to be just amazing. Anyway, getting back to what I was getting at with the grand juries, is the grand juries have been looking at this evidence, the overall evidence of fraud, and with the help of Lieutenant Commander Walter Fitzpatrick, they now also have a treason charge. But I want you to know that, do you know who Gary Creep is? Gary Creep.
I've heard the name, and I think I've read a couple of things.
Yeah, he's the American Justice Foundation.
Okay.
And he's no newbie to this. He is a California lawyer that for 30 years has been a advocate of the United States Constitution against the various ways that the Constitution is being eroded.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, when he got a hold of this, it was like probably the worst example of constitutional erosion that he had ever seen. He is the one that is pulling together indictments in every state in the Union for election fraud.
Yeah, that's in what essence, I remember reading, yeah.
Yeah, in essence, Mr. Obama committed election fraud in every state of the Union because he allowed his name to be placed on, he caused his name to be placed on the ballot or allowed his name to be placed on the ballot when, in fact, he was not eligible to run for the office of the presidency.
Now, isn't there a liability on the part of each Secretary of State that accepts these documents, or would that be the particular board of election?
Neither. Potato, potato, tomato,
yeah.
Tomato.
Obama, Osama.
No.
Oh,
right.
<sorry.
laughs> Yeah. Hey, that was good, Don. this is one of the places it really gets into trouble, because when they started going after the election commissions, the election commission said, nope, it's up to the political parties. The political parties are the one that actually submits the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to the political parties to vet these candidates. It's not our responsibility. So they passed the buck. Now, the difficulty with that is the political parties, of course, this is where the laws were inadequate. The political parties are under no law, it's just their own procedures. It's not a law to say what the processes of vetting a candidate is. In other words, the political party gets to decide that. So the political party had not properly vetted Mr. Obama, and caused his name to be placed on the ballot, and that's why the leaders of the Democratic Party are being held as, or are being charged as co-conspirators with Mr. Obama. You know,
it's funny you should mention that, because I suggested that to a few people a couple of months ago. And now, what about the Federal Elections Commission?
Unfortunately, the Federal Election Commission, the members of the Federal Elections Commission, all have connections to Mr. Obama and the Chicago political mob. So I'm not going to count on them to do the job very much.
They decided
to audit John Edwards' campaign, but even with all of the excess and even with all of the proven fraud with campaign finance and election fraud that was perpetrated by Acorn and other agents of Mr. Obama, I'm not really hopeful that the Federal Election Commission is going to do anything. I'll take it back, and I'll say, well, good for you people. You actually had some integrity. Even though you're personally connected to Mr. Obama, you decided to go ahead and do what is appropriate for the public, and if they do that, I'll take back everything I just said about them.
Last year, Sam, I had Doug Kogan on. Doug produced the film about Peter Paul and the $2 million or so that he contributed to Hillary Clinton's campaign.
I'm very familiar with that issue.
Yeah, and I've spoken to Peter Paul. I don't know where that case stands, but it seems to me either, let's say 50% has to do with Wantagate, and probably the other 50% has to do with that particular case, that she got the appointment of Secretary of State. It would give her some sort of diplomatic immunity, if you get my meaning. Especially if she were to travel internationally. Because, you know, there's a price on her head for the amount of corruption, and it's all about money. Money and murder, actually. But so it's really no surprise that these themes keep reoccurring with these people, is it?
Well, no. And you know what? That's a perfect segue into the main theme of what I wanted to talk about tonight.
What a smooth shift.
It's that when you bring up Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and corruption and behind-the-scenes maneuvering and dirty politics, the grandfather of all of these things is a fellow named Saul Alinsky.
Yes.
Saul Alinsky was a Chicago community activist who was a real thorn in the side of Chicago for years. But he managed to pull together a coalition of the labor unions and renters who were protesting rent and conditions in low-income housing, and in so doing, got himself a pretty good little power base. Now, don't get me wrong, he was also a brilliant man. As you know, any amount of evil can be accomplished by brilliant people with the wrong motives. As you well know, Hillary Clinton's no dummy, and neither's Barack Obama. Now, Hillary Clinton did her senior's thesis at Wellesley on Saul Alinsky because she admired him. She thought he was just a cat's meow. And he would come along 20 years later. Do you suppose Hillary would get upset for me to saying that Obama's 20 years younger than her? And Obama comes along, a new generation of young community activists in Chicago, and he is also trained in the Alinsky method, the Saul Alinsky method. There's a book he wrote. I think it's called Handbook for Radicals. And if you want to find out what's going on with your government today, reading that book will give you all of the inside information on what it is that's actually happening. Now, I'm going to refer you to something else. I want your listening audience to kind of pay attention. Grab a pen.
Okay.
Grab a pencil, because I want you to write down the name of an article. The name of the article is How to Create a Crisis and Steal a Nation. I wrote that article. I belong to the Association for Former Intelligence Officers, okay? And I was assigned to do a job in Kansas City back in the early 1970s, and that's where I first ran into a Saul Alinsky operation. It was called the National Welfare Reform Organization, and that was an Alinsky chartered organization. And how they operated was, you create a crisis, and then while that crisis is going on, you get your change in place while everybody's head is still swimming from the crisis that you've created. Now, when you see the United States Congress and the United States Senate voting to expend billions of dollars without ever having even read the bill, not one of them had read the bill, and the reason was, we got a crisis going on here. We need to pass this right now. That is a perfect example of the Alinsky method. So it went from organizing neighborhoods for people that were having trouble paying their rent up to actually taking over a nation. And that little article, How to Create a Crisis and Steal a Nation, is sort of I use the example of my early work in Kansas City in doing my undercover work in Kansas City on the Alinsky organization and how they operated. It's a very interesting read. Pay some attention to the embedded article in it, too, that has to do with the Cloward-Piven strategy. I might say something about that.
Sure.
The Cloward-Piven strategy, that was named after two Columbia University professors, very socialist professors. I don't know if you know about the, Frankfurt. No, that's not it. There's a very socialist school that was started in Germany. Frankfurt, yeah, I think that was it. That ended up being at Columbia. Columbia is sort of the source of all socialist higher education in the United States. And Professors Cloward and Piven were both sociologists at Columbia University, and they're the ones that came up with this idea of creating a crisis in order to get what it was you want and to bring reforms into the government.
Mm-hmm.
And
now
that...
I was going to ask you, Sam, where would you rank University of Chicago with the Straussian teachings that were going on there?
Well, they've got their share there, but as you might know, it's not all that way. There are some University of Chicago professors that are actually conservative, and don't get me wrong, they're outnumbered.
Yeah.
But those guys wouldn't even get hired at Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chicago might stand out like a zit in the Middle West, but it's still in the Middle West.
Yeah.
You know, there's still some traditional values that can prevail there. You know, Elgin, Illinois, is actually a very conservative community, and it's only, 40 miles outside of Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
And there's other little suburbs around Chicago where conservatism is still... hold sway in a number of ways.
Uh-huh.
So there's at least a chance there, but not at Columbia. Columbia is all of one color. I shouldn't say that. I'm going to get an email tomorrow from some Columbia professor saying that he's very conservative, and he's going to tell me all about his conservative credentials. So let me say that most of them are that way. I don't have enough evidence to say all of them are that way.
Well, if you do get an email from one of those professors, see if there's any old exams lying around, like Barack Obama's, you know, the missing...
Yeah, right.
The missing thesis.
Yeah, well, actually, that would be, that would all, now, I'm not so concerned about his academic records.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I say that is my own estimate. There's another thing. I don't know if you know that about me, Don, but I'm the gifted child coordinator for Mensa, the High IQ Society. So I'm quite accustomed to dealing with very bright people, and my own estimate is that Mr. Obama is a very bright man, probably would qualify for Mensa. Bill Clinton, by the way, was similarly endowed, do I dare put it that way? And the same is true of Hillary. All three of those people are very, very bright people. So, you know, they have, I don't doubt that his academic record is probably top-notch. What I want to see is his admission papers and his student aid papers. That's what I want to see, because I think that what they'll, why else would he be hiding his records?
Well, I made that. That's a point I've been making over and over again in my own writing. If he had it, the nightmare would be over. Just show the records and it's done, right?
Yep.
It's a simple matter, but they didn't exist, and they didn't exist in the quality that would pass muster with people like yourselves. You know,
well,
you
for
and,
that
and,
matter.
And Bob Campbell.
Well, I'd attribute it to, as you know, that certification of live birth has been looked at by forensic specialists who have a long history of testifying in federal court as forensic document analysts. Those are the ones you have to pay attention to. In other words, these people are actually used to passing judgment on documents in federal court. And mm-hmm. they'll say there's just no way that that certification of live birth passes the muster.
Yeah.
That it's obviously a forgery, and even if it wasn't a forgery, it still doesn't tell us where he was born. Anyway, we're going over a lot of the material that I think a good deal of your audience is probably already familiar with, so let me get it back to this Saul Alinsky thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Saul Alinsky did a whole bunch of lying, deception. He saw deception as a legitimate tactic. As a matter of fact, it was even extra sneaky deception. What he would do is he'd say, you set up a situation to make it look like you're guilty of something that you're really not guilty of. And then you keep on the low profile the things you really are guilty of. And then so they come after you for the thing you're not guilty of, and then you get found not guilty, and so you can say, see, they've been picking on me all along, and you actually get away with the things that you're guilty for. That kind of technique is called a red herring.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that phrase?
Yes, I have.
And what it's a false target, if you will.
Yeah, it's like Monica Lewinsky.
Yes, like Bill Clinton's biggest sin was getting a blowjob in the Oval Office, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then what he got impeached for was perjury. If blowjobs and perjury were all that Bill Clinton was guilty of, well, gee, I might even be guilty of something like that. Never mind. And so it was, you know, he took the fall for the lesser crime and didn't even get charged with many of the other things that actually should have been investigated. And I think the same thing is going on with Mr. Obama. After all, he's a student of Saul Alinsky's, and all of Saul Alinsky's tactics are based on pressuring people into making decisions they don't want to make by creating a crisis and deception. And it's actually taught that way. Now, it isn't a surprise to us that if you see that kind of morally corrupt organization, is it any surprise that Acorn is the way it is? Is it any surprise that there was election fraud, that there was fundraising fraud, that Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse made contributions to Mr. Obama's campaign? And is it any surprise that the Federal Election Commission, that is stocked with Mr. Obama's supporters, isn't going to do anything about auditing his campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's dead people voted too.
Well, yes, right. Dead people.
Yeah.
Not only that, I think you heard last week that dead people are getting checks from Mr. Obama. Did you see that one thing on TV?
Yeah.
The lady said, "My dad's been dead for 30 years, and he gets a check from President Obama." That's how much President Obama mm-hmm. cares about the American people.
Yeah. That guy was pretty upset, too.
Yes, I know. Hey, what are they doing with our money? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing is corrupt from its inception. In other words, the founding father, the philosophy and the spirit of this entire socialist movement, keep in mind, Saul Alinsky was very upfront about it. He was trying to carry out a socialist revolution in America. That's what he was trying to do. And the tactics that he used were morally bankrupt, no doubt about it. And so is it any surprise that this is the kind of results that we get a few decades later, since that was the inception of it? Now I want to get to how that manifests for most of us in our daily lives. Where in the world does that deception come from? When do those dirty trick politics show up in just you and me posting on a forum? And I'll tell you how it works. There's something that all intelligence officers know about. It's called PSYOPs. Mm-hmm. That means psychological operations. Psychological operations are techniques that are used to influence your enemy's audience, to influence their value systems, their belief system, their emotions, their motives, their reasoning, their behavior. PSYOPs tactics are used to target audiences in order to induce confusion or to reinforce attitudes or behaviors that are favorable to the side that is doing the PSYOPs operation. Now, that's a common practice. We do that, like, for instance, we did it in Vietnam. We did it in the Middle East. There's all kinds of ways that what we want to do is influence the general public, because nobody gets killed with a PSYOPs, and if you can account to the degree that your PSYOPs is successful, you have less actual violence. So there's an advantage to it for every side that tries it. Now, if any of our audience was around at the time, they know who Tokyo Rose is. They may have even heard of Axis Sally. Now, these were two examples of PSYOPs during World War II. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, Tokyo Rose was a Japanese woman who spoke perfect English, and she would do these radio broadcasts that the American troops would listen to. And she would name a specific soldier. She'd say, "Sergeant Will Smith from Fargo, North Dakota, I happen to know that your wife is fooling around with her old boyfriend while you're gone. And I want you to know that you're fighting for the America and your woman is not standing behind you." And now imagine, and she would go on and she would name individual soldiers. And then she would say, "This is happening to all of you. While you're out of town, your women are being unfaithful to you." What is she trying to do? She's trying to erode the morale of the troops.
Mm-hmm.
Axis Sally was actually an American-born woman who, she was another one of those actors and actresses. And that's
yeah.
I have another article that is going to be coming out soon, Don. I'll send it to you. It says, I think the name of it is Intellectuals, Idealists, and the Road to Hell. And it talks about why in the world are, you know, so many actors and actresses involved in treasonous behavior to the country. And Axis Sally was one of those kinds. And she would do very much the same thing that Tokyo Rose did. Now, as you have probably noticed, a lot of people may not be aware of this, but the minute I start talking about it, I know they're going to recognize it. Mr. Obama has the internet populated with thousands of PSYOPs agents.
Oh, tell me about it.
And when you look at their behavior and you start looking at it from forum to forum, they're actually pretty easy to pick out.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in several different styles. Now, there's something that one of the PSYOPs operation is called a false flag operation. What a false flag operation is, well, it would be if I was a pirate, I'd fly the flag of England until I got right next to your ship, and then I'd open my cannon doors and blow you out of the water. That's what a false flag is. But these people are a little more sophisticated than that. Like, for instance, a woman named Patriot Lisa will start signing on to a forum, and a guy named All-American Joe will start posting on a forum, and Patriot Lisa will post a message on a conservative blog that goes something like this. I want to get rid of Obama as much as the next person, but all I see on this forum is racism and hatred. We're never going to get rid of Obama with right-wing rants and tinfoil hat conspiracy theories. There's no use in even trying. We lost the election, and the best thing to do is wait until the next election. Now, what is that message? Do you think that message is actually a message that would help the cause that she's posting on the forum about? No.
No, well, it's like Tokyo Rose.
Right. She calls herself Patriot Lisa, and the first words out of her mouth is that she doesn't like Obama either. And then she goes on to try to destroy the morale of everybody else on the board. And then, All-American Joe comes along, and All-American Joe says, we need to get torches and pitchforks and march on the White House. Obama's a Muslim black power Mons Venturian candidate for everything that's evil in the world. If I had my way, his own Secret Service detail would do America a favor and take Obama out. Well, now I realize there really are some people on the right that feel that way, but that kind of an attitude is not useful to a movement, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I
was going to say, what you're describing, you see this all the time. He lies. And then he expresses his intention after he's lied, as if the intention somehow substantiates the lie, even though the lie might be the opposite, this dialectic that's always going on. He promises to end the war, yet he's sending in more troops. He goes and visits a country under the pretext of developing a solid relationship, but now they're talking about invading, and I'm speaking about Pakistan. They're talking about going in.
Yep.
You know, those are PSYOPs there, and I see those going down sometimes a year or more before they actually occur in real time.
Actually, what you're talking about there is, if we get time, actually I kind of doubt that we'll have time, but I wrote an article back some time ago called Personality Disorders and World Leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And I focus on the suspected personality disorders of various world leaders, including Mr. Obama. And in the case of Mr. Obama, the watchword is deception. In other words, Mr. Obama is the perfect student of Saul Alinsky because he already had a tendency toward deception after deception after deception.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let me get back to Patriot Lisa and All-American Joe. All right?
Yeah.
So what they do, then they start arguing with each other. Patriot Lisa and All-American Joe. They and that detracts from any serious debate, ruining the experience on the forum for reasonable people and giving the forum a bad reputation. And then Patriot Lisa and All-American Joe will share private messages to compare their tactics, chuckle a little bit, and congratulate each other on how good their posts are and how well they did their job. Now, here's the advice I give to people. When you see folks coming onto a forum who claim to be anti-Obama and then deliver a message that actually erodes the purpose of that forum. Now, don't get me wrong, this can also be just a misguided person. So I ask people to take a look at it and ask themselves, you know, is the message that you're reading serving the goals of your cause, serving the goals of the forum that you're posting on? Not all misguided people are Obama psyops agents.
Mm-hmm.
However, their activity can damage your cause even if they don't have an overt motive to do it. Bad attitudes damage a cause, whether the bad attitude comes from Obama psyops agents or not. So what you do is you confront these attitudes and offer suggestions about what kind of thinking does make a contribution and is part of the solution. If these people insist on posting damaging comments, then they probably are Obama psyops agents rather than simply being misguided people with a bad attitude. These false flag psyops agents are just one type of internet propaganda specialist. And here's one that everybody will recognize, Don. It's what I call the Obot agents.
Mm-hmm.
These are the robot-like psyops agents that can't pass the Turing test. For the sake of your audience, the Turing test was put together by a scientist by the name of Turing, and it has to do with artificial intelligence. If you interact with a computer and you can't tell that you're interacting with the computer, then the artificial intelligence software you're interacting with is said to pass the Turing test. In other words, it does such a good job of mimicking human behavior that you can't tell that you're talking to a computer. Now, these people flunk the Turing test even though they're real human beings.
Mm-hmm.
They say the same thing no matter what you say back to them.
Yes.
They have simple skills, and they seem to pick up their pre-scripted talking points from some central information disseminating point. You know, they all check in the morning and say, what am I supposed to say on the blogs today? You know, what am I supposed to say on the forums today? And if you can, let me give you an example of something that actually happened with me. You can quote a United States Supreme Court Justice, Scalia, saying that we the people are the source of grand jury power. And I'm going to quote Scalia here.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of institutional government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between the government and the people. Now, that's
mm-hmm.
from a Supreme Court justice. And the Obot, in spite of this direct quote from a Supreme Court justice, will respond, your pretend grand jury has no authority and it won't do anything for you and your neocon tinfoil hat buddies, all right?
Yeah.
Now, if you fall for this, and you're saying, well, look, I'm going to try and straighten this guy out and educate him. So you go and find a quote from Susan W. Brenner, who's distinguished professor of law and the author of The Federal Grand Jury Practice, and here's a quotation from her. The classic example of a grand jury acting as a sword is a grand jury in New York in the 1930s. The grand jurors ignored the prosecutors and embarked upon their own investigation into municipal corruption. And the Obot will respond with, your pretend grand jury has no authority and won't do anything for you and your neocon tinfoil hat buddies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're foolish enough to take it one more level, let's just do it another quote. This got from another legal scholar about grand juries. Grand jury has the power to subpoena witnesses and physical evidence, to require the testimony and evidence be brought before it. The failure to comply with a grand jury subpoena results in one being held in civil contempt and incarcerated until the witness complies. Currently, the record for time served due to civil contempt of a grand jury is 8 years. Now, guess what the Obot says? Never mind. You already know what the Obot's going to say. Now, then what they do, these are also, I think it's called astroturfing.
Mm-hmm.
They will go to every blog and every forum with a pre-scripted message, and they just post it. You can, what you can do on Google, you can take the first sentence of something that they post, and you can put it into the search engine, And then you can find all of the blogs that they posted on that day. Because they just go from blog to blog and forum to forum in a sort of, well, let's call this a very simplistic kind of psyops operation. But what they're really trying to do is going around to try and influence the attitudes and demoralize people by having a particular message that they send. Now, I also think that there's also some freelance psyops agents, misguided people who do that same kind of astroturfing, but what they post on every site every day is something they themselves wrote. That's where you run into the diversity in some of these messages.
Yeah.
You can tell that the bulk of them come from a single source. Because you've got, you know, Joe and Mary and Linda and Bob all writing exactly the same things on every blog they visit. And then there's a bit of more creativity, and some of the PSYOPs agents, I think, are volunteer PSYOPs agents that don't get their message from some central category. Now, this next type of PSYOPs agent is another one that everybody will recognize. This has to do with the logical fallacy agents or the how not to have an argument agents. Lawyers learn about logical fallacies, you know, in law school. And, of course, there are other professions that learn about that, too. Philosophers often have a logic course and other kinds of things like that. Now, the reason they study, ostensibly, the reason for lawyers to study logical fallacies is so that they can identify them when someone uses it. The idea being that the lawyer is involved in a search for truth, and logical fallacies will lead you away from the truth. So if you're a trained lawyer, you need to be able to recognize logical fallacies. Unfortunately, and a whole bunch of attorneys that learn what logical fallacies are don't use that knowledge for its intended purposes. They actually start using logical fallacies to bend the truth and mislead people. And it's one of the things that I did when I started researching this and taking a look at the tactics of these Obama PSYOPs agents when it came to logic. I got some things that I came up with. The first thing I came up with was I've got this cartoon. You may have seen it, but across the top of the cartoon it says, "Penguins walk funny."
Then you see
this penguin, and the penguin says, "Penguins are black and white. Some old TV shows are black and white. Therefore, some penguins are old TV shows." And then it says under it, logic. Another thing that penguins aren't very good at. Now, an example of, those are called syllogisms, where it's major premise, minor premise, and conclusion. Again, an example of an accurate one comes from Socrates. It's all humans are mortal. That's the major premise. Socrates is human. And the conclusion, Socrates is mortal. But now let me give you an example of what you can do to twist these syllogisms, which is something that these Obama PSYOPs agents do all the time. But I'm going to give you an example in the sense of humor so that your audience can get an idea of what it's like from a humorous perspective. Frequently when I'm teaching, I use humor as a teaching tool. People respond to it better than just the dry facts. So here's some humorous false syllogisms, okay? God is love. Love is blind. Stevie Wonder is blind. Stevie Wonder is God. All right? And the next one. I'm nothing. Nothing is perfect. God is perfect, so I'm God. If Stevie Wonder is God, I'm Stevie Wonder. Oh, my God, I'm going blind. Now, that's the kind. The rooster crows in the morning, and then the sun comes up. And the PSYOPs agent says to the rooster, "Your crowing is what makes the sun comes up." And the rooster gets, you know, really egotistical and megalomaniac about it. In other words, there's all kinds of ways to mislead people with their thinking. Mm-hmm. Now let me give you some of the dangerous kinds of things that false syllogisms just permeate leftist thinking. Let me give you an example. Slavery was work, and slavery was evil. Therefore, work is evil. It's more moral to be on welfare. I actually had a group of people that, you remember when I told you about that thing I worked back in the early 70s? Their idea was that it is better to take food stamps, it's better to go down to I forget what they used to call it, we'd stand in line to get groceries, surplus food and that kind of thing.
And we call those grocery stores where I come from. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I forget what they used to call it. But anyway, no, it was where they got a free handout.
Oh,
and they
panhandle
on the streets.
Like the food banks, you mean? You know,
yes,
like Second Harvest Food Bank, something like that.
Yeah, right. And what they actually believed was that working was participating in the evil system. So it was more moral for them to panhandle and take handouts than it was to have a job. For them, it was a moral compromise to be employed. And they actually believed that. And that comes from some of that false thinking that is just permeates leftist attitudes. Another one, the Vietnam War was a bad war. Therefore, all wars are bad wars. So I'm going to oppose every war there was. Look, I was what you would call a Vietnam-era veteran. I was never in Vietnam. I got out of the Navy in 1965 as Vietnam was just starting to get moving along. And my training was that I was a pilot, but what I flew was something called a Willie Victor. A Willie Victor is a huge old Super Connie with radar gear sticking out all over it. And it just was not a warplane. They would have had to retrain me to use me in Vietnam, and they decided they could afford to let me go, and I'm grateful that they did. But I kept track of what was going on, and I started going to college, and of course I became familiar with how the colleges were permeated with leftist thinking. And it was very much the anti-war movement. I was almost tempted to change my political affiliations, because you couldn't even get laid if you weren't a socialist on most campuses. And, you know, that's a hell of a motivator. It's a real temptation to change your politics, you know. And what all of these, and I mean it now, these people are well-intentioned. All of these fools actually think they're doing the moral thing, just like the young people that I met that thought it was more moral to panhandle and take handouts than it was to work. So the people that were opposed to the Vietnam War thought that they were fighting evil. And we pulled out of Vietnam, and I'll bet you anything, you know what happened in Cambodia next. About 3 million Cambodians were just slaughtered.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what that movie, The Killing Fields, was all about.
And our government told us, they ensured us that they were not in Cambodia or in Laos, and yet many people have come out and said that they were there. So, you know.
Well, the important thing, though, was is that we left the area.
Mm-hmm.
And when we left the area, they felt emboldened. Pol Pot in Cambodia felt emboldened to just murder all of his enemies. Now, what do you think happened to our allies in South Vietnam when we pulled out? They were just slaughtered. Why do you think those people were trying to break into the American embassy? Why do you think they were hanging on to the runners and helicopters as helicopters were taking off?
Actually, I saw that as a psyops, to tell you the truth. I think a lot of that was staged, don't you?
No, those people were desperate. They knew if the Americans left and they weren't able to leave with them, they were dead.
I was referring more to the people who were demonstrating.
Oh, yes. You mean here in America.
Well,
oh, yeah, I, except...
No, I'm saying even over there, I think the storming of the embassy was staged. There's really no way that those people could overcome it. It was too well fortified if they wanted to protect it. They were encouraging that to, you see, when they fled and they came back to the States, obviously, you know, that would win them some sympathy. And it's a cover for the other things as, that were going on.
I think that might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be. But the thing to remember, that the point that I was trying to make, is that these well-intentioned moral people caused more deaths by having America pull out of Vietnam than would have occurred if America had stayed in Vietnam.
Yeah.
That was the problem. In other words, they're so misguided. And they have these idealistic, completely wrong-brained kind of ideas. Another example, you know, might be that because people have killed in God's name, religion is evil and it should be abolished.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real war going on in this country right now to abolish religion. And the first religion they want to abolish is Christianity.
Yes, no doubt about it.
They're standing up for Muslims' religious rights and opposed to Christians' religious rights. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, anyway, I want to recommend something. There's a guy named Paul Graham, and Paul Graham wrote a wonderful little essay, short and to the point. The name of it is How to Disagree. So if you'll stick Paul Graham and How to Disagree into your Google, you'll find an example of the various kinds of tactics that are used by Obama's PSYOPs agents when it comes to using false logic as a way to do it. Now, fortunately, not all of Obama's PSYOPs agents are that sophisticated. If you go on to a forum, I don't know if you know about CronWatch. Have you ever been there?
Yes, a few times.
CronWatch is a forum where you can't get away with anything. This is a conservative forum peopled by very sharp, very well-informed intellectual conservatives. So when they select the PSYOPs agents to infiltrate at CronWatch, they pick their best. They pick the most well-informed and the most sophisticated to go there. And because that forum is run well, they're even treated with respect, so long as they don't do personal attacks or obscenities.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, those PSYOPs agents are allowed to continue to post, and it's really a great education, because the regulars on PSYOPs will just cut to ribbons the logic and the misinformation that these PSYOPs agents try to post on the CronWatch forum. I kind of cut my teeth on two forums on the Internet. One was the Swift Vets. If you go to Swift Vets and type in Aristotle the Hun, you'll find that I'm still listed there as one of the senior members, and I'm also listed as a senior member on CrownWatch. And, boy, Al, you want to get yourself an education on how to debate with these PSYOPs agents. Those two places are, well, actually, the Swift Vet forum is essentially defunct now. But CronWatch is one of the best I've ever seen. So you get some sophisticated PSYOPs agents that go there. But most of these PSYOPs agents, look, there's the trademark personal insult, name-calling, ridicule, the Latin name for it is ad hominem attacks. And that's the kind of thing that characterizes.
And media spin too. They'll get that phrase conspiracy theory in there.
Oh yes.
That's
an example of the kind of ridicule thing they do. Now look, I don't want to undersell the potency of this. It is simple, but it's incredibly potent. You ask any congressman why in the world he hasn't spoken up about these eligibility issues, and he'll tell you, I don't want to be laughed out of the Congress. In other words, ridicule is a very powerful social pressure. And that's the primary tool that the Obots use. I'm actually on a kind of a campaign to, what would I call it, to empower the people that post, that when the ridicule starts, when they start calling you names and saying you wear a tinfoil hat, and my favorite one that just drives me nuts is they will do that LOL, laugh out loud, as if, you know, as if your ideas were laughable. And so that's the tactics that most of these PSYOPs agents use, and even though they're simple, they're amazingly effective. But the way of approaching them, the way of de-stinging those kinds of things is also pretty simple. I wrote an article on this. Remember you said that you had posted it on your site. The article is called Exposing Obama's PSYOPs Agents and Tactics.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like everybody to read that, because at the end of that article, I actually have a pre-printed up PSYOPs message of my own, that whenever one of these people starts doing that kind of thing with me, there's this this post that I do that's really simple. What I do is I start out by saying one of the best tactics to ignore such a low-class debate tactic is to simply say your piece without bothering to interact with ignorance or rudeness. In other words, you just say your piece, you post what it is you want to post, no matter what they say, you don't pay much attention to them. However, every now and then, when my testosterone's up, I decide I need to do something about it. So here's, I'm going to read this post that I usually put on. I post back to the person and I say, a free hint on how to improve your posts. You will note that the ad hominem argument, the attack the person argument, is at the lower end of the scale that you can see on this pyramid chart at this link. Only one step above name calling, which is the other part of your content. Do you honestly expect to get somewhere with a post like that when many of the readers on this blog have triple digit IQs? In case you need a little help with your Latin, an ad hominem argument consists of replying to an argument or a factual claim by attacking or appealing to the characteristic or belief of the person. In other words, you don't address the idea the person is saying. You're saying, well, how can I listen to anybody like you because you wear a tinfoil hat, instead of actually addressing what it was the person said. That's called an ad hominem argument. The process of proving or disproving the claim is subverted, and the ad hominem argument works to change the subject. The subject is no longer the idea being put forward. It's the character of the person putting forward the idea. Then I ask, I say, have you ever had a logic class? You might want to look at this site. And I put in another link about that kind of thing. And then I say, laugh out loud is a form of ridicule, also known as an appeal to mockery or the horse laugh. The appeal to ridicule is a fallacy in which ridicule or mockery is substitute for evidence in an argument. This line of reasoning has the following form. Laugh out loud, a tinfoil hat idea, which is some form of ridicule, is presented, typically directed at the claim. Therefore, the claim is false. In other words, laugh out loud about your idea. They don't even try to argue the idea. They just do a ridicule of the idea. Now, that sort of reasoning is fallacious because mockery doesn't prove anything about the idea being false.
Yeah.
And this is especially clear in an example like, you know, 1 plus 1 equals 2. Well, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. Now, that's what these people do. Now, if you call them on it and say, look, this is a low-class debate tactic that wouldn't qualify for your grade school debate team, essentially what you're doing is you're taking away the power of ridicule to destroy good ideas. And this needs to be done. Because these people won an argument with ridicule. Excuse me, they won an election with ridicule. That's how powerful this idea of ridicule is. They make fun of you, they attack your ego, and you fold your argument because you don't quite know how to deal with the fact that you're being personally attacked rather than the ideas being discussed. And it's a tactic that is so widespread that that is the typical tactic. Name-calling and ridicule. Those are the two primary tactics of the Obama's PSYOPs agents.
Now, and when I see... Pardon me, I was just going to interrupt for a second. I wanted to say, when I see this going on, what comes to my mind is they've got... They're really succeeding in just diverting everybody's attention away from what's really important. And it becomes you justifying your stance. One could see the moment there's disagreement that something's up. If people are, people are going to maybe disagree on some points, but if it's constantly, a jabbering or a jabbing, there's always this intent to create a disruption. And incongruity with the other members of the group.
That's true, too. They try to start fights.
Yeah, and you know, this is done by certain talk show hosts, too, mind you.
That's true, yes.
It's not just the bloggers, you know.
I was wondering if I was going to have to deal with that when you started introducing me as a guest without any clue. You know, I didn't. The point I wanted to make, and honest, I'm almost finished with this, and as you know, we've already run 20 minutes past our hour.
Yeah.
But here's the concluding thought, and then you can talk about anything you want to. That this ridicule and name calling is so powerful that it detracts from the argument. You actually end up spending your time posting things to defend your argument, and what you need to do instead is call them on the low-class debate tactic they're using. Don't defend yourself. Don't be trying to get them to see that your point has value after they ridicule you. That is not helpful. It is not useful. They use up your resources. They divert your attention. What you do is you call them on it. You call them on the low-class tactic that they're using, and you name it for what it is, and say, if you want to talk to me, you're going to have to raise the bar a little bit on your tactics, because I'm not going to be dealing with something that's at the bottom of the barrel as far as debate tactics. And as long as you're ridiculing me instead of trying to address the ideas that I'm putting forward, and as long as you're doing name calling, I want nothing to do with you, and I will not answer any of your posts from this point forward. And I'm going to warn everybody else on this forum that you're the kind of person that is a really low-class debater.
Mm-hmm.
Call them on it. Don't defend yourself. Don't try to persuade them that you're correct. You play into their hands when you do that. So you call them on the tactics that they're using, and you expose them. You make them look like they're lower than whale shit. Can I say that on your program?
Well, it's late enough, but we try to keep it down to at least three-letter words.
Okay.
If we're going to get vulgar.
Anyway, that's the message that I wanted to give folks about Obama's PSYOPs agents. Mm-hmm. The summary of it would be the whole movement from Saul Alinsky down is based on immoral deception, immoral attitudes, immoral goals, and deception as the means of achieving those goals. And it just permeates the new Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can remember a time when Harry Truman was a Democrat. What do you think Harry Truman would think about tactics like that?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, there's a reason they call him Give 'Em Hell Harry, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the message about Obama's PSYOPs agents, and my advice to people is don't argue with them. Call them. Call them on the tactic. Point it out and say I'm wise to you, guy, and I'm not going to argue with you because you don't use tactics that are fit for civil men to argue.
Yeah. You know, there's a couple of other areas I've noticed, and of course, they're on the Internet primarily because all the other means, you know, the mainstream means of media is pretty much a path down a predetermined tunnel, if you know what I mean. They're going to follow the same pattern, all of them. And occasionally one will try to give the illusion that they've broken away from the pack, only to find that, you know, you've been suckered into another PSYOPs.
I know. I get a big kick out of when the leftists say that Fox News is a right-wing station. Hey, mm-hmm. I've never seen Bill O'Reilly say one right-wing thing.
Yeah. But
Fox News is not a right-wing organization. Fox News barely qualifies as independent or middle of the road. Frankly, mm-hmm. I think Fox News is way too liberal.
Well, they say fair and balanced, but, you know, when I hear the lies, I wanted to refer to something I heard, even on C-SPAN. They were showing, I forget the admiral's name, but he's sort of the head of the Joint Chiefs, and he's talking...
Admiral Mullins.
Michael Mullins, that's it.
Yeah.
Michael Mullins. He was talking about, we have to do this in Afghanistan, and then we're going to take care of this in Pakistan. They're just talking about Pakistan. Now, I can remember about 6 or 8 months ago, I warned my listening audience, Obama went to Pakistan. Watch if Pakistan doesn't become the next place where war breaks out while they're posturing for Iran. And Obama went over there, and first of all, in Afghanistan, didn't even acknowledge the soldiers. The soldiers were pretty ticked off. And he goes and he visits with the Pakistani leader, and then he comes back. And, of course, I was following what was going on with the financial end of things and was actually able to sort of determine what was going to go on with the finances. And I was telling my listening audience, watch India. Well, this was just a couple of weeks before we had that so-called terrorist attack where you know, the Mossad agents went in there. And then I'm listening to this admiral, and he's describing the situation, and it dawned on me, to the depths of my soul, I saw complete psychopathy. This guy actually believed everything he was saying. It there wasn't a shred of lying in his appearance, in the tone of his voice, none of that. He absolutely believed what he was saying, and I could see the purest form either of psychopathy or mind control. I don't know if you think that's
from a psychological point of view, that's called a delusion.
Yeah.
It's when someone sincerely believes something that isn't true.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it, and I just knew there was no doubt about what I was seeing. If you know what I mean, sort of like when you see the Virginia Tech shootings or Columbine, those are other types of psyops. And yes, sometimes people do die. Do you think 9/11 wasn't a psyops? Phew, that was a huge one, and it's still going on. You know.
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna close with this because I need to get off. You know, where I am, it's, you know, getting on close to 2:30 in the morning, and
mm-hmm.
I've got clients in the morning. So
yeah.
I'm gonna leave your listening audience with this thought, because it's a good way of deciding who to listen to. As you may know, there's a good side to all of this, and the good side is that more people are now getting their news from the internet than they are from radio, television, and newspapers. I think that's a step in the right direction, because if anything, the internet is diverse. You'll find very left-wing sites, but you'll also find very right-wing sites, and you'll find sites that are actually trying to do responsible research and sort out the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And I pride myself on my own blog as being thoroughly vetted. I even ask all of my readers. It's almost, I won't pay them money for it, but I almost say, like, I've got a bounty for any inaccuracy you can find on my site. And if you find an inaccuracy on it, I will post your finding on the front of my blog and give you all kinds of praise for helping to keep this blog free of inaccuracies. And they do that. And occasionally I get caught, too. It's like I say, I hate looking like a fool, so I do my research quite well. But occasionally one of my readers will pick something up that I've done, and I do. I thank them profusely and put it right at the top of the blog that one of my listeners has found a mistake. Now, look, here's the message I want your listening audience to know. get your news from a source that is not licensed by the government. Did you hear that? If they hold a broadcaster's license, don't believe them. It's that simple. Because they're all under the thumb. Why do you suppose Fox News has an editorial policy that they can't talk about the eligibility issue? Even though the eligibility issue is a hot topic on the internet, and millions of people are talking about the eligibility issue, and World Net Daily has I think it's getting up on 500,000 people now have signed the petition to see the birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the broadcast outlets, none of them, not even Fox News. I have people say, look, if what you're talking about with these grand juries is true, Glenn Beck or Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly would have said something about it. No, they're broadcasters. Their license mm-hmm. is subject to the pressure of the government, and there is an edit. I'm not saying that Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck are complicit in this. I'm saying they got a job, and they have to follow the editorial policy of the boss. And the boss has said, we're not going to talk about the eligibility issue. So listening to broadcast journalism isn't news. It's propaganda. And it's a way to be kept in ignorance. So, you know, at least it takes a lot more work to sort out the truth by having to go through all of the diversity of opinion that's on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still better off than you are listening to any broadcast outlet.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you can imagine, I was referring to Admiral Michael Mullins and his account of what was going on, and none of it was true. None of what he was saying was true, but you could see he believed that, and because it's on C-SPAN, this is how the PSYOPs work too, if I'm not mistaken, is that you know, C-SPAN has a certain type of credibility because all they do is talk about government and what's going on in the world. They appeal to a certain, you know, the book readers. They have their book club.
Right. And it's seen as intellectual and objective.
Yes. Yes. And it's when you know, you specifically, Sam, know that something they're telling is not true because you have researched and found proof to dispel what they're saying or debunk what they're saying. You can't put any credibility into anything they're doing at that point. You know, you've got to be on guard constantly. You cannot.
That's exactly right. Sometimes it's true and sometimes it's not. You wouldn't have to be on guard if it was a lie all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You've got to measure every single thing they say and really pay attention. Because they figure, you know, that there's a strong likelihood that we don't even know what the topic of the day is, or the topic of the week or the month. You know, they assume that if we should happen to be watching, it's by accident, and that somehow we won't connect what they said yesterday with what they're saying today. If you get my meaning, they really think that they have all of us over a barrel. They've got complete brainwashing control of us.
Well, actually, that's true of the majority of the population, but one of the really neat things is it's always a minority that brings about change.
Mm-hmm.
In our original revolution, the great bulk of the American people, or the colonialists, were supporters of Britain. They weren't supporting the revolution. It was a minority of dedicated men and women who gave birth to this country against the inertia of the majority.
Mm-hmm.
I even go so far as to say the majority is almost always wrong. So, you know, if you're part of this movement to get rid of Mr. Obama and somebody says that you're in a minority, you say, good, that validates the position I'm in.
Yeah, I know I have better chances.
Yeah, if my ideas ever get wide acceptance, I'm going to reexamine my ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, well, I got to go.
Yeah,
got to go to work in the morning. Get some sleep in the meantime.
I was just going to close out the show. I want to encourage listening audience to go visit your website, if they haven't already, AmericanGrandJury.org. And then you've got another blog site.
My personal blog is thesteadydrip.blogspot.com. That's thesteadydrip.blogspot.com. I also have a blog that's called The Shrink. My own radio program is called Call the Shrink. And I have created a support blog for that radio program, and that's called calltheshrink.blogspot.com. And if you go to Call the Shrink, you'll find a lot of things that have to do with what it was I was talking about now, about how to disagree, how to use logic, how to think like Aristotle. You'll find a lot of things like that on that Call the Shrink blog, as well as my description of the things we didn't get to talk about tonight, which was personality disorders and world leaders. You ever decide you want me back on, we'll talk about that one.
Oh, yeah, we'll have you back on. In fact, I was going to suggest that. So, sure, if you'd love to come on, I'd love to have you on, and I'm sure the listening audience would too.
Okay, but it's not going to be next Monday, but we'll arrange a time at some future date.
Yeah, it'll be have to be in June, because this month is already booked up. So.
All right, good for you. I'm glad you got it booked.
I want to thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Don, and I look forward to the next time we get together.
Same here. Okay, you have good night.
Good night.
Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, Sam Sewell from the AmericanGrandJury.org. And Sam will be on again. So in the meantime, I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow night for another episode.